Wir machen so, I have like 10 brief questions.
10?
Maybe. Or maybe just 5.
Okay, go.
Und dann haben Sie noch 2 Minuten. Schauen wir mal.
Let's do it.
So, we talked already yesterday a little bit about the Brexit, and now after the Brexit we have the Trumpism, or call it however you want. Do you have any explanation, or what is your explanation for this?
Oh, the inept handling of our inevitable crisis on both sides of the Atlantic. The United States, let's begin with the United States. One statistic that came from McKinsey a couple of months ago, I'm not quoting left-wing sources, I'm quoting McKinsey, okay? 81 of American households, families, 81% of American families today are worse off than they were in 2004. 81% is a very large percentage. Yeah? And if you think that between 2004 and today, even though there was a blip in between, national income has skyrocketed in the United States, you get an idea. Let me give you some other data. Yes, the rate of unemployment in the United States has gone down, but the quality of jobs has diminished spectacularly, as has the security of jobs. You have all the good jobs have gone, and they've been replaced by McDonald's-like positions. They're very precarious, and which involve a lot of traveling. America is a very large country. So the commute, if you take into consideration the commuting that these people have to do in order to have these terrible jobs, you end up with very, very great degrees of misery. Now, when you have two candidates, one who is promising continuity, like Hillary Clinton was, who goes to Wall Street and gives speeches in private, I give speeches in private too, but I can assure you that I do not say anything here that I do not say out there. But in those speeches that she gave in Wall Street, it's clear that she was saying to them that we have to have two personas. We have to have a persona that we present to the voters and one to each other. You know that she's on record saying that. And then you have somebody like Donald Trump.
Can I add something?
Please.
Before you say something about Donald Trump?
Of course.
Who is a racist? Who is a sexist? Who is xenophobic? Who is making jokes about disabled people? Go on.
Let me add one more thing to this litany. The person who is now going to become the President of the United States recently said that what is the point of having nuclear weapons if you don't use them?
I know.
But the point I'm going to make is that faced with between continuity of the same old and Donald Trump, those who voted for Donald Trump, the vast majority of them, it's not that they like Trump.
No, they want to have a change.
No, they don't want to have a change. They don't. It's not even that. Yes, they do. But my understanding, my simple psychological understanding, is even more simplistic than that. They are asking themselves a very simple question: who can I vote for that will piss off the establishment? Yeah. And if it's a sexist, a horrible person, I'll vote for him just because I've had enough. I was campaigning in Britain before the referendum because you mentioned Brexit. I told you that yesterday. I gave 16 speeches in 16 different cities in Britain, arguing against Brexit. And I think that it was quite important for my audience to hear it from me, because no one can accuse me of being a lackey of Brussels. Correct? So when somebody like me, who was crushed by Brussels, by the establishment, goes to the people of Leeds, of Doncaster, of Wales, and says to them, look, I know better than anyone how bad the European Union is, but you must stay in. You must stay in, and you must struggle to improve it. Yeah? And they were saying to me, no, we're not going to do it, because we're sick and tired of being, and this was an interesting expression that an old woman said to me, I'm sick and tired of being a discarded person, a person that has been left out to rot. And she, at that moment, didn't care about the European Union, trade deals, customs unions, the passporting of financial institutions. She didn't care about the right to travel to Germany and to Greece and so on. She never did anyway. She wanted to give a bloody nose to the people that made her feel discarded. This is something we must understand. We liberals, because we are all, whether we're left-wing, right-wing, we are in the end, we're all liberals. We are all people who value the basic rule of law, of democracy, and the end of bigotry, whether it's sexism, whether it's racism and whatever. We make a very big mistake. We think that those who've been left out of our own bubble think like us or have an obligation to think like us. They don't.
But do you think then that politicians should be more honest and tell the folk like, okay, the taxes will go up in the next few years if we want to have a good future and so on? Do you really think that politicians are going to win elections with honesty?
Absolutely. I have a deep belief in the capacity of electorates to appreciate honesty. I won elections. I won the largest majority in of any member of parliament by telling really horrible truths. What did I tell the Greek, my electorate? I got 142,000 votes in my constituency, which is double than anyone has ever received. What was I saying? We're bankrupt. We can no longer live on borrowed time on the basis of loans. I don't believe we should. There should be no increases in wages or benefits until we have growth. And all I promise you, as I said before during my speech, is that I go to Wolfgang Schäuble and tell him that, and I tell him the truth. And I people say thank goodness there's somebody who's telling us the truth. We should try it, you know. I don't think politicians have actually tried that, telling the truth. It's a new strategy.
So, the topic of the event is how to handle stress and pressure. How do you?
When I chose to enter politics, that's a direct answer to your question. I wrote my first letter of resignation and I kept it with me in my side pocket. That's how I handled it.
Seriously?
Yeah. Because I knew that the system would eject me at some point. I hoped it wouldn't, but I knew it would. And therefore, I knew that I wasn't going to be there. This was not a career. It was not a job. I didn't want to be minister. And I believe that this is a qualification that one should have. Anyone who wants, you see, I spent all my life in universities, okay, as a professor. And I never wanted to be head of department, because what's the point of being head of department? If you're an academic, you want to read, write, give lectures. Why do you want to be a manager? If you want to be a manager, you might as well manage a company and make a lot of money. It's more interesting to manage a company than managing a heavy department of economics. Yeah. So I always thought that, you know, being head of department is something that you should do as a chore. As something that you don't want to do, but you do it when people ask you, as a public service. But the moment you stop doing it, you feel happy again. Yeah? This is how politicians should be. Anyone who wants to be a member of parliament, anyone who wants to be a minister should be immediately disqualified, because they're dangerous. And it's very stressful, because if look at now Mr. Gabriel and the people on the SPD, whom are my least favorite German politicians. The only thing they care about is how to preserve their limousines. And they are very stressed because, you know, they can see that their ratings are going down. How will they keep their limousines and their offices? So if you have your resignation letter here, yeah, this is a great stress alleviation mechanism.
There's so much more questions. Especially about the role of Angela Merkel in Europe, because,
yes.
I mean, a few years ago, when everyone was saying, like, she should lead Europe, there was a big shitstorm. Anyway, that is not my
question. What do you
question.
Mean by that? By
we talk about
by
that
whom?
Later.
Not by
a
me.
Lot of a lot of people.
Not by us.
The Germans, no, they want to take over. They want to be...
I wish
no,
the
no,
Germans
no,
took over. My problem is that Germany does not want to lead. That's my problem. Germany is the powerhouse of Europe, and it does not want to lead. This is our catastrophe. I wrote an article in FAS, I believe, before I became minister, and I said Europe needs a hegemonic Germany. So, you know, yeah.
For my next interview with Angela Merkel. My last question, because that is quite interesting. I don't know if you know that. Obama is coming to Germany. For sure you know
he
this.
He is in Greece.
But
plus.
Today he is in Greece.
He went to Greece.
Why?
Plus.
But why? Why Greece?
Why Greece?
You want a truthful answer?
Yeah.
I think he feels guilty.
I am.
When I spoke to him in April 2015, he was very clear that he thinks that what's happening in Greece is monstrous. He used very unpresidential language to describe the austerity policies. Very unpresidential language. Well, let me take what he said. I'll put this in my textbook. Don't tell anyone until I do. He said, austerity sucks. Those were the very words he used. But he also told me that he does not feel that he has the power or that his administration has the inclination to come to our assistance. So I think that he feels deep down that he failed Greece, and by failing Greece, he failed Europe. Because, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a contest between Greece and Germany. It's a contest between reason and unreason. The third bailout that was signed, and that this is why I'm no longer minister, is a travesty. We took another 85 billion from Europe to do what? To increase corporation tax, making sure that all corporations leave and go to Bulgaria. And then who's going to pay the Greek debt to you? So I think Obama really thinks that. Secondly, we have better weather. So
all right, 5 to 10 more minutes, okay?
I'm happy to be here for 2 hours, but there
you go. Hat irgendjemand von Ihnen eine Frage? Wenn dem so sein soll, heben Sie kurz Ihren Arm, fassen Sie sich, ich meine es ernst, Sie wissen das, kurz, und dann sollte ganz schnell noch ein Mikrofon zu Ihnen kommen, damit alle Sie hören können. Das ist Ihre Chance. In der Mitte, da kommt das Mikrofon von hinten, Sekunde. Bitte schön. Ja, Sekunde, Sekunde, bis der Tonmann wieder hinten ist. Jetzt.
My name is Jack Weiss. You had given in July or August an interview to a German wiki called Sonntag.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I've given many, but I don't remember.
It was 2 pages, so it was quite long.
Right.
They said, or you have been asked whether you have been friends with Tsipras.
Yes.
And you said, yeah, it looked like, but after all, you had to separate. Could you tell us the reason why you are still not considering any more Tsipras as your friend?
Yes, of course I can. Alexis and I go together. We weren't friends before. We go together when he wanted my advice back in 2010, 2011, as to what his policies should be. At the time, he was a leader of a tiny party, 4%, and my advice then was the same as it is now, that Greece was in an unsustainable debt trap, and that should be his first priority. That he should not consider that back then his party was against the euro, and I was saying, you know, the euro is a terrible currency, but once you are in it, you might as well stay in it and try to fix it. So I advised him against Greco's. I advised him on what the policies should be of the party, and I kept on doing this. At some point, towards 2014, beginning of 2014, he started saying to me that, look, I agree with you that this is what must be done. But I don't have anybody to do it. You will have to come in and do it. And we had many discussions. And what I conveyed to him was that, look, I'm not a politician. I'm an academic. I have no interest in becoming a politician. But I will only do it if we have complete agreement on what needs to be done. And the fundamental thing is we're not going to surrender, to succumb, to pressure, to take more loans when our economy is not restructured before. So it's a question of sequence. We will not accept new loans to continue the malaise. If we agree on that, and we are prepared to see it through to the bitter end, and I have your backing as Prime Minister, if you become Prime Minister, then I will accept to do it. So we had this agreement. We had also an agreement on particular policies, on what we would do if the ECB closed down our banks, on what we would do with tax rates, or what we would do with all those things. And on the 5th of July, the Greek people gave us a 62% mandate to continue along the lines of that agreement that we had. And that very night, I met him in his office, and he said to me, it's time to surrender. I said, no. We just got 62%. This is precisely the wrong time to surrender. And he said, no, I'm surrendering. And at that point, let me put it very briefly, there was nothing else to discuss.
Weitere Fragen? They are too shy.
Yes, they are. It's the language. If only I spoke German.
Maybe. He understands a little bit of German.
Tom Finnan, we had a little speech yesterday on the lounge regarding this possible speech of maybe only one person, suggested that could only be Angela Merkel. Even if that would happen tomorrow, in a week, in a month, or a year, how do you stop the influence that you're mentioning already in the European countries, like you mentioned all the countries, Denmark, Poland, Hungary, Holland, and France? Would that speech be possible to bring Europe together and stop the situation in those countries?
There are no guarantees in politics, so I can't say definitely yes. But it's worth a try. There are people out there, good people out there, in Hungary, in Poland, in Greece, in Italy, in France. In France. No, I mean that, in France. The French are distraught by the fact that they have no one really to vote for. I'm talking about progressive Democrats now, who would really feel, maybe they don't know it yet, but if that speech took place by Merkel, the morning would be beautiful. The morning after the night before. There would be a surge of optimism. We wouldn't all form a grand CDU to support her, but there would be a surge of hope throughout Europe that would really have a capacity, a chance of turning the tide away from what I call the nationalist international. Because now we have a nationalist international, an internationale of nationalism throughout, from Brexit to Le Pen, all the way to Trump and so on. And who can reverse that? I wish I could, and I'll try to help. We have the Democracy in Europe movement, which we founded in Berlin, symbolically in Berlin, last February. We have many thousands of members here in Germany, throughout Europe, and we're trying to do that. We are mostly left-wingers, who are Europeanists, and who, I can assure you, fall behind Merkel if she put forward a minimalist, democratic, and I call it unionist, agenda for Europe.
Are you scared? I know you're not, but...
Oh, yes, I am.
About the elections next year in France and in Germany?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You saw what happened on the 23rd of June in Britain. Who would have thought, 6 months before, of what happened? And you know what scares me more? What happened on the 24th of June? Suddenly, all those people who were on our side supporting the Remain campaign, like the current Prime Minister, suddenly become Brexiteers. So even today, after Donald Trump's
election, same in the US.
You see a lot of people now saying, "Hang on, he's not so bad." Yeah. So it is perfectly possible. Look, the lessons of the 1930s. Populists, they were being described as Mussolini. If you look at newspapers, serious newspapers, conservative newspapers, in Germany, in Britain, in the 1920s when Mussolini was coming up, there was exactly the same kind of accommodation towards him. And you cannot counter those people by trying to steal part of the agenda to say, you know, you want to kill all the refugees, we won't kill them exactly, we will electrocute them. We will not be as harsh as you say, but we will be harsh. Because you cannot win. The only way of countering them is by being radical on the opposite side and say, you know what, these people deserve our support. These people, to have crossed the Mediterranean in a dinghy, to have seen their children and parents die, they are traumatized and they deserve a hug from us. And this is what we would want our children to experience if they were under similar circumstances. You need this radicalism of humanism to counter the radicalism of anti-humanism.
I think that was the perfect end.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.